Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When Mother Jashoda was trying to bind the offending child, she saw that the binding rope was short by a distance the width of 2 fingers. Thus, she brought another rope to join to it. Purport. Here is the first chapter in Krishna's exhibition of unlimited potency to Mother Jashoda when she tried to bind him. The rope was too short. The Lord had already shown his unlimited potency by killing Putana, Shakatasura, and Trinavarta. Now, Krishna exhibited another vibhuti, or display of potency, to Mother Jashoda. Quote, "Unless I agree," Krishna desired to show, "you cannot bind me." Thus, although Mother Jashoda, in her attempt to bind Krishna, added one rope after another, ultimately, she was a failure. When Krishna agreed, however, she was successful. In other words, one must be in transcendental love with Krishna. But that does not mean that one can control Krishna. When Krishna is satisfied with one's devotional service, he does everything himself. Sevam mukhi hi jivadau swayam eva sparatyadaha. He reveals more and more to the devotee as the devotee advances in service. Jivadau. This service begins with the tongue, with chanting, and with taking the prasad of Krishna. Atashi Krishna namadi na bhaved graham indriyai seva mukhi hi jivadao svayam eva sparatyada. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1, 2, 2, 3, 4. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Aganatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitangena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Gena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Brindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivazadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tadama Bhajamanasya Swarabhakasya Kritagasha Dwangulo Nam Abhutena Sandade Nyachchagopika. When Mother Yashoda was trying to bind the offending child, she saw that the binding rope was short by a distance the width of two fingers. Thus, she brought another rope to join it. So, how wonderful that you're all getting to experience Kartik outside of the month of Kartik by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam and the wonderful pastimes of Damodar Leela. It's very nice. Somehow, whenever you hear about two fingers too short and rope binding Krishna, immediately you think of offering lamps and different austerities that devotees perform, and the glorious month of Kartik, the Damodarastakam prayers. So it's such a wonderful, wonderful time of year. And so I was reminded reading this verse somehow that actually it was during the month of Kartik, and this pastime that was quite instrumental in helping me to come closer to Krishna consciousness. It was during the month of Kartik, and I was staying with one friend of mine, and he decided to have a Kartik program at his house, and he invited me to be part of it and help out. And I was not really so much involved with Krishna consciousness, but I was inspired by what he was doing. And he had me go and find some sand at a building site, bring it back to make a mound so we could put candles in. And he had invited His Holiness Mahavishnu Maharaj. And I'd met Maharaj a few times, seen him in some kirtans, and thought, you know, he's a very ecstatic personality. And everyone was all upset, and not upset, but anxious, you know, because Maharaj is coming, Maharaj is coming. And I was kind of like, anyway, so what's the big deal? He's just another guy, you know, thinking like this, the mentality of a new person who doesn't really see any distinction between anyone. It's all one. It's all the same. It's all cool. Everybody's okay, you know. And then we had a nice gathering of devotees, about 12 to 15. And in comes Maharaj, and everybody's bowing down, and I'm thinking, well, should I bow? Should I not bow? Maybe, maybe not. Then I thought, okay, I better do it, or I might get in trouble or something. Then Maharaj came and sat down right next to me out of everyone in the room, and I thought, oh. And as soon as he sat down, I felt like this energy. And I was thinking, I don't think he's a normal person, actually. And then he just started speaking to me in such a nice way, very down to earth, and about what do you do, and music, and talking about the Beatles and so many things. And I was thinking, wow, this is really cool. I like this guy, you know, he's really nice. And then it was time for the program to start, and he started to share the pastime of Lord Damodar and the binding of Krishna, Mother Yashoda. And he gave me the book so I could follow along as he was telling the story in the Damodarastakam prayers. And it was that rectangular book, you know, Damodarastakam with the Digdarshini of, I think, Sanatana Goswami. And as I was looking, he was telling the pastime, and I was looking at the front of the book, and I was seeing this lady in the sari with this stick in her hand chasing this little blue boy across the yard. And he was basically naked, more or less. And I remember just looking and thinking that, just like all babies, he had such a cute little bottom, you know. And he's running in fear, and I think in the picture you can almost see tears running from his eyes. And I was thinking, this doesn't seem like such a spiritual picture, a woman chasing a little boy with a stick, you know. But as Maharaj was revealing this pastime, And he was talking so much about the love that a mother has for her child. And talking about how God's love for his devotees is so powerful that he appears as a small child and enables this relationship, this reciprocal relationship, to occur. Because actually, the love that a mother has, as Srila Prabhupada explains, is the closest thing that we can understand to the unconditional love in the spiritual world. Because a mother is willing to do anything, even chastise her child, whom she loves very much. And I was thinking about how when I was young, my mother would correct me. She had plenty of opportunities to discipline me and chastise me. And I would always ask her, "So why are you punishing me?" And she would always give the same answer. And she would say, "Because I love you." And it never quite made any sense. "Well, what do you mean you're disciplining me because you love me?" That doesn't really work, you know. If you love me, you'll give me like ice cream and candy, you know, lollipops. You'll take me to the amusement park. If you love me, you don't, you know, make me stand in the corner or chastise me or correct me, ground me. But somehow those words stuck in my head. So when Maharaj was speaking, I was thinking and reminded of that mentality that a mother's love is that she's willing to discipline. She's willing to give correction even to someone that she loves so much that she wouldn't want to hurt them at all. And in this case, I was so like taken by this pastime and Marge's explanation that I was thinking, this is so powerful. I've never heard anything like this about God. You know, God, and God becomes a small child and he runs around in the yard. His mother is chasing him with a stick. Where do you hear anything like this, you know? But it all seemed to make so much sense. It was all so perfect. And I was somehow, the conclusion that God is a person was becoming, you know, developed in my consciousness. And I was becoming quite emotional about the whole thing. And then Mars stopped and said, "Okay, so now we're going to do the prayers and offer candles." And we did that. And then, as you know, as in true Maharaj, Mahavishnu Maharaj style, the kirtan kind of, the Dhammadurasa prayers concluded and everyone stood up, and the next thing you know, we were all running around like mad people in somebody's front room. And this, in my terminology, this old man with an accordion was the most ecstatic. He was running around with the most energy. And I just stopped and I thought, you know, when I'm 50 plus years old, this is what I want to be doing with my life. And it was like, that was it. That night, changed my life. And the next morning I woke up and I told my friend, "Let's go to the temple. I want to get beads and I want to start chanting." So whenever Kartik time comes around or I hear this pastime, somehow it has a very special place. So please forgive me for sharing such personal information, but it's like that, you know, because it's a personal movement. And we have different pastimes attract us, and different personalities attract us, and different relationships are developing all the time because it's a personal relationship. And this pastime is all about a personal relationship between Mother Yashoda and Krishna. And specifically, as the Acharyas explain, and here Srila Prabhupada explains, this most important point of the two fingers. These two fingers. The finger of parishrama, which means our endeavor or our desire to achieve something, the effort that we put in. And then the kripa, the Krishna kripa, the mercy of Krishna. I remember going out on books, you meet often Christians, and if you ever try to talk about karma with Christians, they immediately, you know, and their explanation is, you can't get back to the spiritual world or to heaven by works alone, by works alone you cannot achieve the abode of the Lord. And I would always try to say, yeah, we understand that also, you know. But at the same time, this principle is there, that it takes both. It's not that you can just sit at home and say, yeah, by the mercy of the Lord, you know, whatever happens. Maybe to some extent, because the mercy is the ultimate factor. As we see here, Mother Yashoda was so intent on binding Krishna. And we know that in the pastime, that this whole pastime is also about us binding Krishna. It's about us somehow figuring out how to tie Krishna into our heart. Every Kartik or every time we hear these pastimes, it's an opportunity to try to bind Krishna. And Mother Yashoda, she's, you know, the queen of, you know, Vrindavan, which is nothing but cowherd village, the land of the cowherds. So there was no shortage of rope, right, to bind Krishna. And Mother Yashoda was dressing Krishna every day. She knew how big Krishna's waist was. Don't you think she knows how to pull it around? Anyone who dresses the deities, especially if you get the opportunity to dress Radha and Krishna, you get to know exactly how far to pull. And, you know, she knew. She loved Krishna. She knew how big his waist was. She would tie his belt on every day. And now all of a sudden this, you know, amount of rope that was meant to easily tie him around this grinding mortar, it somehow wasn't enough. But she had plenty of helpers to go and collect more rope. And she kept tying more and more rope on and wrapping it around. And more she was starting to perspire and become flustered. Her hair become disheveled, flowers falling. But still, every time she pulled it around, it was just too short, by two finger lengths. So Mother Yashoda is becoming so completely bewildered, thinking, what is this? And as Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, this is Krishna. He's displaying his vibhuti potency, displaying his opulence of extreme mischievousness, that he can't be bound so easily. Just like you think you can tie up an ordinary boy, you can't tie up Krishna. It's not so easy. Our acharyas give the two examples of from the animal kingdom, that of the monkey and of the cat. You know these examples? That these two fingers too short, one is the endeavor and one is the mercy. So like the baby monkey has to cling on to the mother. So he climbs up onto the mother's chest and just clings on for dear life. And I don't know what it must be like to be a baby monkey, but a lot of adventure going on. As soon as she jumps into the tree and starts swinging around and doing everything, then really her arms are taken, her legs are engaged. So it's all about the monkey holding on. So the acharyas explain that this is the aspect of endeavor. And they make the comparison to the gyanis and the yogis. And they said, because they think that by their intense endeavor, they can somehow hang on. But if somehow their grip isn't strong enough, like the little baby monkey, then they could fall. So like this analogy of the monkey is given to help us understand the principle of endeavor, that the baby monkey has to endeavor to hold on, like the gyanis and yogis. But the example of the kitten, as we know, that the kitten doesn't hang on to the mother. What does the mother do? The mother comes in, she picks the kitten up with her mouth, the same mouth that she kills mice with and eats them, but she picks up the baby cat from the back of the neck and she carries the kitten. So the kitten doesn't do anything, really. Just kind of surrenders to the mother's will. And then by the mercy of the mother kitten, or mother cat, then the baby kitten is transported to wherever it needs to go. So our acharyas explain that this is like the devotees, the bhaktas, that they're also completely dependent on the mercy of Krishna. So it's like both are required. We have to endeavor. And what is that endeavor in our life? The endeavor of the devotee is to try and take more and more shelter of Krishna. Daivyesha gunamayi mamamaya dharatyaya. That this energy, this material energy, this separated energy of the Lord is very difficult to overcome. But only if we take shelter of the Lord. And how do we take that shelter? How do we perpetually surrender ourselves to Krishna? Srila Prabhupada explains at the end of the purport, he brings in this Atashi Krishna Namadi verse, where he says, Sevan Mukhi Hi Jiva Dao. I think it was in Conway Hall in one lecture that Srila Prabhupada started the whole lecture. And I think he said something to the effect that you will be surprised to know that spiritual life begins with the tongue. You can imagine it's like spiritual life begins with the tongue. And then he offered this verse and explained that because our senses are imperfect. Our senses are imperfect. They're impure. So we can't actually experience the spiritual with these material senses. They have to become spiritualized. And we know of the 10 senses, not counting the mind, of the 10 senses, the tongue is the most voracious because it has two functions. It's a karmendriya and a gyanendriya. It is both a knowledge acquiring sense, a gyanendriya, and it is a motor sense. So it has two functions. So the tongue, it likes to vibrate and make noise. Right? It likes to talk. Anyone here has the experience that the tongue just likes to rattle on? Yes. I have some very close friends who are expert at talking. How about Krishna also? But sometimes it can go on and on and on. So talking is a very popular thing to do. Now you have these things, unlimited minutes. So you can talk your whole life away. Right? Just talk and talk and talk. And if you get tired of talking, or even while you're talking, you can be texting, which is kind of like talking. Some people I've seen, they're like doing something on the computer with the phone on speaker talking and also texting at the same time. Multitasking. Maximum communication with the tongue. But Srila Prabhupada and the Shastras explain that we have to engage the tongue in spiritual activity, which is our foremost activity, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, this Kirtanam. Jaya Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jaya Sitaram Lachman Hanuman Ki Jaya. So we engage the tongue in chanting the transcendental sound vibration, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yeah, His Holiness Sachinandan Maharaj was, as we all know, he was just here. He gave a really wonderful talk at in London about the chanting and the potency of the chanting and how before we chant, he gave the analogy of an archer. Like everyone knows an archer, that there are three aspects to an archer being successful. And he said that the first one is you have to focus on the goal. You have to know where the target is. He gave this analogy of one professional archer that he had tried to learn from or visited. And the archer was like world renowned, you know, like respected by so many, a teacher of so many. and the archer, when he had the students gathered, the first thing that he did was he put a blindfold on and covered his eyes. And the target was like quite some ways away. And he took his bow and he put the arrow on and he pulled it back, and everyone was watching with like bated breath. And he fired the arrow, and the arrow missed by 2 kilometers, Maharaj said. And then he took the blindfold off and he said, "So what did you learn from that?" And they were all like, "We don't know, because we thought you were going to hit the target and you missed it." And he said, "Exactly." He said, "If you want to hit the target, you have to be able to see it. You have to be able to see what is the goal. You have to know what the goal is, and you know, need to be able to focus on it." He said, "So when chanting our rounds, the first and foremost thing is to focus the mind." And then he chanted some different prayers. There are many prayers that we can chant before engaging in japa. He said, "You have to focus the mind on the goal, to hear the holy name, to serve the holy name, to become a servant of the holy name, and then to not commit offenses, and to focus." So we focus the mind first. "I want to hear each mantra. Just let me chant." He said, so this is the first point. The second point of chanting, he said, is the endeavor. He said, so in archery, you have to pull the bow back. You have to load the arrow on. He said, and this takes strength. It takes endeavor. He said, just like in our chanting, you have to make some endeavor. Endeavor to chant, not endeavor to do other things while chanting, but endeavor to chant. As Prabhupada says, you have to sit properly. You have to try to focus the mind and just hear the holy name so it can enter into the heart, and make that endeavor. Try to chant 16 rounds in one go, or at least work up to that. It's asked by Srila Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, how can we be the most successful on book distribution?" And what was Srila Prabhupada's answer? That rise early in the morning and chant all 16 rounds in one go. So to just try to have that focus, to be able to sit and chant all 16 rounds at one time without interruption, that takes great endeavor. And then Maharaj was explaining that the last point was the release. So you actually have to let go of the arrow. And he said, this letting go is very important, one of the most important parts of our japa, that we have to let go of all the things that the mind is hanging on to. You know, sometimes for me, when you chant japa, it's like you enter a cinema and all of a sudden the projector comes on and the screen lights up and it's like, woo, all of your favorite memories, desires, dreams, hopes, fears start playing on the screen. And you're like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna. And it's like a madman is in the camera room and he just keeps loading all the different ones. And if you don't pay attention, he gets into the really nasty stuff, you know. And sometimes he's projecting something and you start thinking, yeah, I'd rather watch the movie than chant the holy name. Bring me some popcorn. So it was like this when we're chanting. We have to let go of all these things. That they're incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers, you know, into the ocean, into the sea. But we have to let go of all of those and just focus on the holy name. Keep pulling the mind back to the holy name. And Srila Prabhupada made it so simple. I remember after some time of chanting, I was thinking, oh, there must be more to this. You know, I have to do something. Maybe get a book, get a picture, get this, get that. So many things. But Srila Prabhupada said, no, it's very simple. It is just a conversation between the tongue and the ear. Where is the mind? There's no mind. It's just a conversation between the tongue and the ear. Simply you have to chant, and simply you have to hear. Shravanam and Kirtanam. Just simply chanting and hearing. That's it. It's just a conversation between the mind, or between the tongue and the ear. No mind. And if we really try to listen, like if someone is saying something to you that's so vitally important, like someone once told me, because I said I had hard time remembering people's names when I meet them, and go this place, you meet someone, you go that place, you meet so many people. And someone once said that if you walk into a room where you're going to meet a whole load of new people and you want to remember, they said, just imagine if they told you before you entered the room that tonight you're going to meet a person, a new person. And if you remember their name, at the end of the night when we ask you, what is this person's name? If you remember, that we'll give you a check for £1,000,000. And immediately the mind goes, oh yeah, I'll remember that. Right? Go into the room, you're like, as they're talking to you, you're like, sorry, what's your name? And they tell you your name, their name, and you're like, yeah, yeah. You're like so attentive, right? Paying such attention. Or sometimes we have bionic ears, you know? When you there's someone that you know on the other side of the room and you think they might be talking about you, right? You ever had that experience? I'm sure none of you have, because you're all, you know, pure Vaishnavas. But sometimes the ear is like honing in on what someone's like. You know, you just hear your name, that was Chinita. You're like, ooh, what's going on over there? Is it glorification? Blasphemy? What's happening over there? So the ear can be very attentive, but somehow as soon as you start chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, the films come on, and we can't pay attention. But Prabhupada said it's simply a conversation between the tongue and the ear, so we just simply have to listen. So Seva Mukhi Hi Jiva Dao, it starts with the tongue. And then, of course, the other glorious aspect of the tongue is that it is a knowledge acquiring sense, a karma in, or a gyanendriya, because it likes to acquire taste. Who here likes to taste, eat? Who likes eating? Honoring prasad, rather, sorry, not eating. So, wonderful opportunity to perfect our lives simply by honoring prasad. Srila Prabhupada said, prasadam is the secret weapon. Because the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. I don't know, ladies, if it works. I think it's usually flowers, diamond rings, things like that. But maybe everyone likes to honor prasad, right? So, if we just satisfy the tongue with these two methods, and I was listening to a lecture this morning, Srila Prabhupada was explaining how that this honoring of prasad, he says anyone can do it. It's a lecture in 1967, and he's talking about this verse, Seva Mukhi Hi Jiva Dao. And he says, anyone can do this. You're all coming because you like this prasad. And they're like, yeah. He said, you like to honor this prasad, but you can do this at home. And he said, every home, everywhere, should be offering their food to Krishna. He said, and if in every home, everyone starts to offer their food to Krishna, he said, the whole world will become like Vaikuntha. So he was encouraging everyone, you like the taste? No problem. He said, just chant the mantra, offer your food to Krishna. So these two processes can help us to purify all of our senses. And then Prabhupada said, so you like to chant? You like this music? You like what these musical instruments we're chanting? And everyone's, yeah, yeah. He said, and you like to taste prasad? Yeah, yeah. He said, so the process is so simple. What is the difficulty? What is the difficulty? You just chant and honor prasad. And then your life is perfected. So we can take to this simple and sublime process and perfect our lives. In this way, these two fingers, our endeavor, and the mercy of Krishna. So by the mercy of Krishna, we can achieve anything, but we still have to put the endeavor in. So this is our sadhana and our spiritual practice. So I think I'll finish here. Anyone has any comments, questions, or corrections?